Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What's up, guys? Today's date is September 16th. I'm Steven Masso, and as always, you're listening to Via the Source. Now, I'm recording today's episode from Miami. If you heard the last episode, you know that I was going to actually fly to Miami to watch the game between the Patriots and the Miami Dolphins, and that was from the press box. I had full media credentials for this game. I was able to get a few interviews in the locker room as well, so that will be included in portions of the episode. But first of all, I want to say a big thank you to the Miami Dolphins organization for allowing me to do this. They continue to be one of the best organizations in terms of just opportunities for fans and community service. So it's just something I'm extremely grateful for. It's an opportunity that I could not even imagine getting. So first things first, a big thank you to the Miami Dolphins organization. So I'm going to be giving you guys a whole rundown of my time there. So I got into Miami. We went to a stadium very early to check out some of the pregame events they had going on before the game even began. One that they have before every single game is the Football Unites Community Tailgate. This tailgate in particular invites diverse community programs to attend these Dolphins home games, and they unite fellowship through these group activities. In this Football Unites tailgate in particular were the Women of Tomorrow, the North Miami Beach Police Athletic League, and Be Strong International, as well as some former players, including Aronde Gadsden. So that was really cool to see. They were just interacting with a bunch of kids, and they all looked like they were having a blast, and that was before the game even began. So in all, it was just a very fun experience just leading up to the game. But then the actual game began, and I'll run you guys through my recap of this one right now. So the game was not close at all, but yet I will say that it was closer than the score would suggest. The Dolphins did lose to the New England Patriots, and it was by a score of 43-0. And through the last 2 weeks, the Dolphins have been outscored by a score of 102-10. So this game on paper may not look like it was any better, but I think it was an improvement. Despite the loss, this game felt in some ways as an upgrade to that brutal 59-10 loss against the Ravens. There were actually some signs of life from this Miami Dolphins defense as they trailed New England by only 13 at the half. So it was the Dolphins offense in this game that looked absolutely miserable. They were shut out and they also surrendered 2 pick-6. So let's take a little bit deeper of a look. So many will look at the score and assume the game followed the exact same script as the one last week. And the one last week, we all know, was a very, very weak defense and an inept offense to go along with it. But however, in this game, the defense at least looked slightly improved, but the offense looked significantly worse in this game. Defensively, the Dolphins struggled to stop Antonio Brown, even though his role was so limited. He finished the game with 4 catches for 56 yards and a touchdown, but really, he could have had like 3 touchdowns and dozens of more yards. When Xavier Howard was lined up against Antonio Brown, he was really kept in check. But it was when the Dolphins lined Brown up against Eric Rowe or Wiltz that he seemed almost unstoppable. Because you see here, at least in my mind, Antonio Brown is still one of the best in the NFL at his position. It seems like the Dolphins elected to treat him as if he was some role player since he had just joined the team. And in my eyes, that was their first mistake because all the talent was still there with Antonio Brown. Now, Sony Michel, he also had an effective day. He had 81 yards rushing and a touchdown, but compared to some of the other performances that the Dolphins have gave up in terms of the run stop, this actually looked like they kind of moderately kept him contained in a way. So we move on to the rough part, and this is the offensive side of the ball. The offensive line continues to struggle, and that was really a massive effect on the running game and, of course, on quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. This was one of Fitzpatrick's most stagnant games of his career. It was something that was very uncharacteristic of someone that we're so used to being a gunslinger and chucking the ball around downfield. So Fitzpatrick finished this game 11 for 21, 89 yards, 3 interceptions, and 2 of those were pick sixes. It was just a downright lethargic performance from the entire offense. Now, one of the pick sixes came on a very bad bobbled catch by Kalen Ballage, where he basically handed it to Jamie Collins so that he could run it back for a pick six. So that one, I will say, doesn't fall on Ryan Fitzpatrick all that much in my eyes. The second pick six was by Stephon Gilmore, who also contributed on the other pick. So it was a very good game from Stephon Gilmore. And remember, Stephon Gilmore Gilmore is someone who is regarded as one of the best, if not the best, cornerback in all of the NFL right now. So I was able to ask him a question in regards to whether he feels like he is still underrated in the NFL.
You were Pro Football Focus number one corner last year, but do you still feel like you're one of the more underrated defensive backs in the league?
I mean, it is what it is. If I think I talked a little more, kind of a quiet guy. Kind of like, you know, just quiet and try to handle my business, you know. So that's how I look at it.
Now, once the game was out of reach, Coach Flores went back to that same concept of throwing Rosen in there for the final few drives in garbage time. Now, Rosen statistically did not wow anyone, but in this game, he tried, which is a very big thing to take away. He finished the game 7 for 18, 97 yards, one interception. Now, when I say that he tried, I mean this guy was chucking this ball downfield. It was almost like his frustration with the entire offense was showcased for us as he just threw the ball down the field on every single play. Of Rosen's 24 snaps, 21 of them were pass plays. And also, Rosen had an intended air yardage of 16.3 in this game, which was the highest among all quarterbacks in week two. So in other words, again, he was chucking the ball downfield. And frankly, it could have been a solid outing for Josh Rosen, but he was just getting no help from any of his receivers. Jakeem Grant dropped what would have been a touchdown when the pass literally hit him in the face mask. He was wide open on the sidelines. It would have been a huge play. And then on the very next play, Preston Williams on the opposite sideline drops what would have been another huge catch. So just no help from the receivers. Both of those were very demoralizing, and I think it should have shown up better on Josh Rosen's stat line. I think he should have had a way better stat line than it would suggest. Now, Preston Williams, despite that drop, had a solid outing. He made one of those weekly nice catches that it seems like he's going to do. He finished the game with four catches for 63 yards. Now, the run game for the Dolphins in this one was non-existent. Kenyon Drake finished with 19 yards. Mark Walton racked up 15 yards in garbage time. And Kalen Ballage, who was dominating the snaps in the first few drives, he finished with only 6 yards. So, whole running game looked terrible in this one, forced the Dolphins to be completely one-dimensional, but frankly, the offense was non-existent as a whole in this game. So we move on to my takeaways, and my first takeaway here is to start Josh Rosen. And I'm not saying that as if it's some magical antidote that's going to fix the countless holes on this team, because it really won't. But in my mind, there's just no reason not to. I've been clamoring since the preseason, all the things that he's the younger player, he has a higher ceiling, the team invested in him when they traded for him. Those are all reasons that he should have been starting. But you just throw all that aside at this point, and he's just simply the better player. He is playing better. The offense was abysmal today, and at least when Josh Rosen was out there, there were some flashes of moments that could be decent. So there's just no reason in my mind not to start Josh Rosen. It's not about easing him into a new offense right now. It's not about him being young and have to adjust to this playing level. He is just simply the better player, and you need to have him out there, especially if you want to build some sort of confidence in this team. You need to have Josh Rosen out there. My second takeaway is that the defense is salvageable. This was my main concern heading into this game. I was really worried that Flores, who was supposed to bring this defensive mentality to this team, would not be able to adapt after that atrocious week one outing. So that did not happen. So it wasn't pretty, but the defense had its moments. It had a ton of those small victories that we could at least, you know, cling on to for some hope in this season and look at as a foundation. That did happen in this game. And a lot of the defense's issues in this game could be attributed to the offense that was not keeping them off the field at all. So things to look at here in the defense: Xavien Howard can still neutralize a number one receiver to some extent, and if the Dolphins could just find another solid asset to help them, then the team can really stand a chance, because Rowe and Wiltz were just huge liabilities in this game. They have no business being lined up against AB, and they were struggling against Dorsett and Edelman as well. The Dolphins need to find a true number two cornerback. Now, I know I was kind of hard on Eric Rowe here, but he spoke to the media after the game, and he was answering some questions in regards to the state of the locker room and the frustration of the players. So here's what he had to say.
Yeah, frustration, because you know, we're not seeing the results. I mean, we work hard as hell in practice, and you know, we're just not, you know, putting it out there on the field. So I mean, that's the frustration. There's no anger, there's no, you know, despising locker room. We all just know that you gotta get back to work.
My next takeaway is in regards to the Patriots, and it's that they're going to have a very scary offense. Antonio Brown and Tom Brady, I assumed, were on the exact same page and already had a very, very strong chemistry by how they had success so early on. Tom Brady came out the gates, he threw 3 for 3, and all of his passes were to Antonio Brown. So to me, that was showing a huge chemistry, but Tom Brady said that they're actually not that far along in terms of their chemistry and that they have a long way to go. Here's what Tom Brady had to say in regards to that.
We have a long way to go. We really do. You know, I feel like we're, we haven't been working together for very long myself. You know, even Jules this year, Josh this year.
Now, my last takeaway for this game was that Kalen Ballage is not a true workhorse back, and he should not be out-snapping Kenyon Drake. That was another point that I kind of touched on in the preseason. I was a huge Ballage believer until I realized how bad the offensive line was. Ballage, I think, could thrive as a typical first and second down back with a formidable offensive line. But here in Miami, there's just, again, no holes that are going to be opened up for him. The team needs a guy like Kenyon Drake who has the ability to make these plays for himself. You combine that with Ballage having these poor passing ability or poor pass catching abilities, there's just really not many ways that he could thrive as the main weapon in this run game. And I'm okay with the Dolphins trading Kenyon Drake, believe it or not. If it's for a decent price, I'm okay with it. And I'm okay with the Dolphins going full running back by committee, including Ballage, Laird, Walton, and Gaskin, as long as they're seeing a somewhat even split. Because even though none of those guys really stand out as true superstar running backs, I do think they could be serviceable. And if the Dolphins could get something in return for a guy like Kenyon Drake, then that could help them even more in their rebuild, because Kenyon Drake isn't going to save this team in any way, shape, or form this season. So if they want to get something in return from him, that's something that I'm not too worried about. The running back position is one that's very, very easy to replace in this current time. So those are my thoughts on the running back position for the Dolphins. Now, before I wrap up this episode, there was a presentation and an award given to a woman by the name of Maria C. Alonso. She was the recipient of the NFL Hispanic Heritage Leadership Award. The Hispanic Heritage Foundation and Nationwide partnered for the 9th annual NFL Hispanic Heritage Leadership Award during the 2009 celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month. The awards recognize the contributions of Hispanic leaders in each NFL market. So Alonso received her trophy as well as a $2,000 donation to United Way of Miami-Dade. So we were able to speak to her after the game, and she said some very nice things. Here is Maria C. Alonso.
I have to say it's a really special moment, not one that I've worked for. It's very rewarding to be recognized, but that's not why I do it. So it's a special day. At the start of Hispanic Heritage, I am part of that community, and I'm happy for my mom that cannot be here.
So that's just about going to wrap it up. Again, my takeaways from this game was that the defense was very improved. They were able to adapt, especially after that really poor performance last week. So hopefully the Dolphins can make that same adaptation to their offense this week, and we could see some sort of improvement. And I think that all begins with starting Josh Rosen. Again, I don't think Josh Rosen is going to catapult this team into some star-level team or even get them a few more wins. I just think that he is the better option of the two, and he has a higher ceiling, so might as well put him in there. And as always, guys, if you have any questions, feel free to ask them. If you're curious about my experience in the locker room or in the press box, I'll answer those questions for you in a future episode. As well as if you have any questions about fantasy football, I hit big on some of my fantasy booms this week, so I'm very excited about that. I'll continue doing those in the future every week, so stay tuned. And giveaways, if you're someone who is very interested in the giveaways I had a few weeks ago, I do plan to have another giveaway as soon as I get back to Texas. I'm still here in Miami right now as I record this. That's why I may sound a little different in this hotel room. So once I get back to Texas, I will announce the next giveaway. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So as always, guys, it was a pleasure to be your host. I appreciate all the very kind words. I've been getting some very nice comments from you guys. Until next time, though, I'm Steve Amasso, and this was Via the Source.